chilling new original docuseries on Paramount Plus.
Why did he kill his family? The answer lies across the ocean and a woman named Sylvie.
She's the can model.
Where desire leads to deception.
I ended up spending $12,000 and $15,000 a day.
It was addictive.
I can't get you out.
And obsession leads to murder.
Who did this to your family?
You can't really maintain a fantasy forever.
Control Alt Desire. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
Fight week is upon us. It's the CBS Sports State of Combat podcast with the Brian Campbell, UFC 246. Ahead of us this weekend in Las Vegas, Connor, Cowboy, have to see it, need to see it, need to fire you up ahead of time with that lethal injection, the untraceable kind that can only be found from the performance enhancing audio. That is the SOC. It sounds great. It smells even better.
It is a beautiful aroma that arouses me.
Yes. Thank you, Connor. We will be hearing, seeing, and feeling a lot of you this week. Well, to some degree there. I am fired up. The Brian Campbell, the voice that you hear. We're going to be on the ground in Vegas this week. You're going to get all kinds of BC. Media Day special, interviews with all the big names. CBS Sports HQ left and right, myself, Rashad Evans, and more. Breaking down the fights before, after, instant analysis pod. We got you covered from beginning to end. So let me bring in my man right now. Baby girl, put it on him.
I want you to put it on me. I want you to try to do your best to put it on me.
I'm about to put him on right now. He is a UFC Hall of Famer. Always sweet, never sour. It's the great earthquake survivor, Sugar Rashad Evans. How are you, man?
BC, what's going on, baby? I love the introduction. Thank you. I'm great.
It is Connor Cowboy Week. You're a fan. You're a Hall of Fame fighter. You're a respected journalist with ESPN and CBS Sports. You're... fanboy level of excitement for what this fight means and the entertainment we are expecting for Saturday.
It's off the chain right now. Let me tell you why. I mean, for the most part, you know, me and Donald Cerrone go back a long time. I'm talking about living in Jackson, the Jackson gym upstairs with mice and rats and stuff like that. So we go back a long time. So a big part of me is just excited for Cowboy to have this opportunity to get what's due to him. You know, I mean, you know, Cowboy has never fought on a stage like this, and to see him get a stage like this and with a great career like that, you know, that he's had, it's awesome. Yeah, and then on top of it all, you got Conor McGregor returning.
I was just going to say, there's so many elements that make this fight so good. I mean, not just the potential for combustibility, entertainment, not just the fact that the biggest star in the history of the sport is coming back for only the second time in 3 years, but you want to talk about the perfect B-side, the ultimate fan favorite, the guy who's accomplished almost everything in Cowboy Cerrone, has almost every record. In fact, if you don't believe it, pick up a six-pack of Budweiser in Las Vegas this week, and his face will be on it with all of his records, and he gets a chance for really what's the biggest fight of his entire career. So we're fired up. We're ready. It's not just big fights this week, though. I'm sure everybody saw Monday night's college football championship and LSU walking away as the undisputed champion. If you want more, if you need more, you got to put it in your ear hole. I'm talking about the CBS Sports Cover 3 podcast. We know that the season is now over. That doesn't mean that they're going to take a break. That doesn't mean there's still not a lot to talk about. Cover 3 is still your place for the best coverage in all of college football. Chip Patterson, Tom Fornelli, they got you covered with all the post-title game coverage you can imagine. Go download and listen to the Cover 3 podcast anywhere podcasts are found. Rashad, you're a former, high school star in the backfield. Did you enjoy LSU's beatdown there?
Oh, that was a great game, man. That was a really great game. I thought at one point that Clemson was going to run away from it, but then LSU showed, you know, why they're why they're number one.
Exactly, exactly. What number did you wear in high school, Rashad? Remind the people.
I wore number one.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. Big time. I like in all sports when people wear number one, especially like a run, like a top running back or receiver wearing number one. It's like, it's aerodynamic. It looks good on the jersey.
Yeah, I was the one that had my shoes spatted up and I had my jersey all like to my waist and everything, man. I thought I was something. I thought, like, getting dressed for the games was the biggest part for me.
Is there any footage online? Can we go to YouTube and type in Rashad Evans high school highlights? Is that a thing?
There's not a thing like that, but I can get some footage, man. See, I have
guys our age, we just missed. Rashad, we just missed that technology breakthrough where everything we ever could have done would be documented.
Exactly. I mean, I have a few things, but nothing like these kids nowadays.
Yeah, no doubt about it. It's funny, Rashad. We had a great podcast last week on the SOC that really looked at the mindset for both fighters coming in. A lot that we talked about from Conor McGregor doing that MacLife interview. First time he really came and showed where his heart, mind, soul is entering this fight. And then he went out and after round and did 47 minutes with Ariel Helwani on Monday of ESPN. And I feel like we got another hour's worth of interesting topics to talk about, exactly where Conor's head is at, all this good stuff. And we're going to do all that and get you all kinds of ready for UFC 246 on the other end after a pause for the cause and a word from our friends and sponsors. Yeah, dig it.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
New CBS Monday.
NCIS. Here's where we can see them.
NCIS and NCIS Hawaii return with all new cases.
Double tap to the chest, one to the head.
These guys are professionals.
All new criminals.
Violent island that got here.
Welcome to paradise.
And all new crimes to be solved.
If you're watching this, I've been arrested.
What are the charges?
Just one. Murder.
New NCIS and NCIS Hawaii. Monday starting at 9, 8 central on CBS and streaming on Paramount Plus.
And we're back, BC, Sugar Rashad, our boy Brandon Wise off this week. Rashad, I mentioned that. Conor McGregor, who's headlining in his return to welterweight bout, it is Donald Cerrone this weekend. Sat down with our good buddy Ariel Helwani of ESPN. And in some sense, it was like, okay, it was a lot of typical. He almost answered every question the same way. He's ready. He's hungry. But Ariel has a way of getting to the heart of a matter on certain topics. And there were some things exposed that I want to sort of flesh out here entering this fight. One of the themes we addressed last week, based on the honesty Conor has showed, that his loss at UFC 229 to Khabib, he's claiming, and look, you know, you can always take an excuse for what it's worth, but awful camp, destructively awful camp. But did you hear the details? And the reason why I bring this up is the storyline in this fight to me is the king still the king? Can Conor come back and be celebrity fighter and go the BMF route and retire in 2 years? Or can he be a legitimate title contender in one or two divisions and go back to being the biggest star in the sport? So some ways you want to look back at how easily and one-sided he was handled by the great Khabib Nurmagomedov and sort of find a way to say, well, that wasn't the real Conor. He had been off for a while. Now we hear the training camp was bad. I know in your heart of hearts, Rashad, when you watched that fight, that wasn't the real Conor McGregor. I felt hearing his words that for the first time he was admitting that not only was that a bad camp, He may have been partying, not a little, but a lot during that week and not have been in the right mental headspace. You believe that based on his words? And what factor does that actually play?
I believe it. You know, I don't think he has any reason to go out there and lie as far as, you know, his antics leading up to the fight. I mean, that's usually something that, you know, you can kind of admit after you've gotten some distance away from it and some kind of got some mental clarity on your behavior during that time. So I think that, you know, he was out of control. And I think that's one of the reasons why he had to have that come to Jesus meeting with himself and be like, what am I going to do? Am I going to continue to be this guy, or am I going to be the guy that I was, you know, that I feel like I was destined to be, which is a world champion? And, you know, I've been in camps like that where you just kind of you're not on your P's and Q's, and you're not, you know, doing the things that you used to do. You know, you're cutting corners, and you know, you cut enough corners, pretty soon you don't have a square anymore. You have a dang circle. And I think he's done that in that last camp. But I honestly don't believe that that it would have made a difference. I'm gonna be honest. And here's what I mean. I mean, I think that the areas where he lost that fight in, I think there were areas where I don't believe that he would have been able to close the distance had he been not doing everything he was doing, because the ground pressure that he was under with Habib, you know, not too many guys who can survive that, and he didn't survive that. So I don't think it would have been too much different. But as far as from a mindset point of view, going into the fight feeling confident, yeah, I think that, you know, hanging out and partying and doing those things does have you feeling a little less confident. And now it makes you think, well, was some of his antics because he wasn't feeling so confident?
That's a fair assessment, because like we mentioned last week, he was, you know, an extra level nasty in the build. And obviously there was extenuating circumstances that aren't there for a normal fight. The dolly throw, the in and out of, you know, the legal system and all that. But look, he was just straight up nasty in that build, not in a way that he's trying to sell himself, in a way that he's trying to get into Habib's soul, intimidate him. Sometimes there's a desperation in that. You may be right that even if it's prime Conor on any day, Styles makes fights, and that's a bad style matchup for him. We all agree with that. I just didn't see the crispness in his striking. I didn't see the power. I just didn't see the same guy. You can always argue that getting dragged down and taken down consistently will suck that out of you. But for him to admit, I was drinking during fight week. I was drinking. You know, he basically broke down to the level to Ariel that we were bringing in guys from, you know, from that area in Russia who are good wrestlers to spar with. And he said these weren't sparring matches. These were real fights. And he had to stretch himself to knock them out. And then he would take 3 days off and kind of party. Now, look, he didn't use terms, Rashad, like Bugar Sugar. He's not saying I was doing drugs too. A lot of people took that feeling based on the way he answered questions. I'm not here to tell you I thought he was or not necessarily, but if any of that is in play, even though he admits he was in great shape and even though he admits he was confident, you're not, you can't be the same guy. You can't be a master. You can't, you know what I'm saying? You can't burn it at both ends. We all know that.
No, you really can't. And I think, you know, for the most part, you know, not even on a mental level, but physically speaking, you know, when you're burning midnight oil and you're not allowing your body to rest and recover, then it's impossible, just flat out impossible for you to go out there and perform at your highest level, because your body requires things. It requires sleep. It requires, you know, proper nutrition. It requires all these things in order to get it to a state where it can compete at its best. So he wasn't giving himself the best chance. But one thing I heard in this interview more than anything, I feel as if like the last interview we heard with Conor, it was him, you know, going through the steps of grieving and I guess, you know, getting over a situation, because he was very apologetic. And that's something you do whenever you want to move forward in your life. You have to forgive yourself. But in order to forgive yourself, you have to have other people forgive you, and you have to admit what you've done. And you have to speak it out, and you have to face it. And I feel like that's what he's been doing. And I think all of that has been extremely cathartic for him. And now we're seeing the catharsis that is taking place in a very calm and a very cerebral Conor McGregor. And I think also Tony Robbins had a lot to do with that.
That was interesting. Now shout out to Tony Robbins. I bought a book or two back in the day when I needed to get out of some ditches there. I'm no stranger or deflector on the idea of building yourself back up, and to see them develop a friendship and him credit actual meetings with Tony Robbins and turning him around. I'm just saying it was a little bit different than the MacLife interview. If you just watched this Ariel interview and after it was over, somebody said, based on that interview, which way you bet in this fight? I don't see how you can come out of there and not think, he's back. He's back, bro.
I felt the same way. And And here's the thing, like I'm such a fanboy sometimes for Conor, you know, because I get excited about Conor. He speaks exciting, and he speaks things into existence. And I admire anybody who can do that because I understand what it takes to do such a thing, you know. And he's back to that again. He's back to understanding that he has to set these goals, these lofty goals. He has to set these goals because in order to set these lofty goals, that is where he's been able to find his greatness. And he's gone back to that, you know. So I think that, you know, this Conor is exactly the Conor. Is exactly the Conor that we need to be seeing going back into this to this new era of what he wants to do in his career.
Absolutely.
So I speak and believe and receive it. Speak and believe and receive it. Speak and believe and receive.
Thank you, Deontay. Thank you for that. You know, people sometimes hear me talk about Conor and you know, go in the comments section, oh, he's such a fanboy. All these media guys just want Conor to win because he raises the ratings and the traffic and they get to travel more and they get to do that. Well, look, that's there's an element of that for any of us in the media that are connected to anything. But I think for any of us in a sport, fan or fighter, you want the health of the sport to be as healthy as possible. And having a Conor McGregor winning and in big fights is a big part of that. But I think it does go even deeper. You just sort of said, you know, you're admittedly like a Conor fanboy. I don't see how you could be a UFC fan over the last few years and not be a Conor fanboy. And let me actually explain that. You can tell me that you hate him and that you're going in there almost like a Mayweather fight, hoping him to lose. But to me, that's fanboy at the same time. I don't see how you could consistently have watched the rise and fall and rise again, potentially, of Conor and not be deeply emotionally affected. And that's because he is a personality that's more dynamic as a fighter than I think anyone who we've ever seen. And it's not just the ability to talk trash. It's the ability to make you care about his struggle at such an intense level of emotion where you're saying to yourself, either, like I said, I hate him and I need him to get knocked out because he's a loudmouth and because I believe these accusations against him. And, or it could be the other side of this man has a level of belief that is so much higher than maybe it should be or maybe what is natural, that it goes back to that old Mystic Mac magic that, look, Rashad, it's freaking compelling. It makes you want to say to yourself that whether I want him to win or lose, I want him to be there at the very least. I don't want him going away for 3 years. I want him to be there every 3 months on the dot.
Yeah, and I agree with that. And I think one of the things that draws me into to liking Conor and making him somebody that I pay attention to is the fact that, you know, he's one of those guys who really his belief in himself is something that, you know, that people write books about. You know what I'm saying? It's legendary the way that he believes in himself. And also there's a sense of honesty when he speaks, even when he's talking all his trash, because you get a sense that he truly doesn't care at a level that most people do. You know what I'm saying? And the fact that he truly doesn't care at that level where most people do, it allows him to speak with a way of speaking that you don't hear normal people speak, and it's refreshing. You know what I'm saying? It's like, oh, okay,
it's
you know,
intoxicating. It's like inspiring to the gills.
It is.
It's weird. So Ariel mentioned in that interview that there, you know, you go back and watch the documentary on Conor, and it's got that footage when he's in Cage Warriors and he's living in his parents' house. I mean, you can go back and watch it. Him and his longtime girlfriend Dee are in a bedroom in his parents' house, like eating cereal. And Rashad, he's talking at that point about his future and about where he's going to will himself. That is like straight out of the same voice inflection that you heard heading into Nate Diaz 1 or 2, or when he said he was going to knock out Aldo with the first punch he threw. And again, I don't think the king is all the way back, and physically he's going to have to prove that on Saturday. But he even said it in that interview. I went back to those interviews and heard myself speak. He's been speaking this into existence from the beginning, and if he's back rewired where he needs to be, look, Cowboy's always going to be a tough out for anybody. But stylistically, there's a reason why Conor's favored. And I just think if we are set to believe that his confidence level is back where it is, I mean, man, that you know, it's like a video game. Everybody's got a rating, a Madden rating. That jacks you up another 5-10 points.
It does. But, you know, honestly speaking, he is facing a lot going into this fight. I mean, in my opinion, I believe all the pressures on him. You know, he's got all the pressure on him. And whenever you're carrying all the pressure, it's never a fun thing. But if I can say, if anybody who handles pressure well, it is him. But at some point, what we have learned over the last, you know, 15 months or so is that Conor McGregor is human. You know what I'm saying? And he does get affected by the same things that we get affected by. It's just, you know, he's been able to be able to mentally push himself forward. And this fight presents a different kind of challenge to Conor, because now he is mentally firing. He is feeling way better than he has in the past. And that's a scary thing, because when you feel so great and you know that, you know, everything is the best that it has been in a long time or ever, then you know a loss would truly mean something totally different if things weren't at the perfect level, you know? So there's a bit of pressure in the fact that everything has been going so good.
Yeah, he eats up that pressure. It motivates. There are certain people, obviously, that prefer to live in that state of tension at all times. I mean, Mayweather was an absolute, you know, all-timer at being able to be at his best when the stakes were the highest. There was something, like I mentioned, there was something about who he was internally and was putting out during the build to Khabib that didn't feel fully like him.
Right.
This kind of feels like it again, but you got to win the fight. And that's why we're fired up for Saturday. As much as I want to sit here and talk about everything that Conor said, and maybe I'm not done, let me hit you with this. Do you believe him when he says he's going to make $80 million in this fight? Can you connect the dots for me, Rashad? Even with that money the top-level fighters get that we don't hear about, $80 million?
No, he's not making $80 million. But Conor McGregor knows this. He knows that people tune in to see somebody fight and make $80 million. So whether he's making $80 million or not, people are going to believe he's making $80 million, and they're going to tune in to see an MMA fighter make $80 million. It's just how it happens. And that's how he's been able to get to the position that he is right now, because before he wasn't making the millions that he was making before, but through talking himself up enough, he actually did make that kind of money. And I think this is another one of those situations.
It's interesting because I think we'd all agree that compared to boxing at the very highest level, you know, we know the whole story about MMA fighters not being paid, you know, really what they deserve for UFC's financials. And for you know, just straight up comparing it to boxing. And if anyone's deserving of Mayweather and Pacquiao money, what does that mean? That means sort of like whoever you're fighting, you're guaranteed that sort of base of 30 to 40 million, which is it's just absurd. But when you get to that level of fandom where you are driving a fight in a fight card all on your name alone, and to some degree, as you can see, this is not a loaded card. This is one of those where UFC saying Conor's name will be enough. Yes, Cowboy will play a key role, but Cowboy could have been anybody to a certain degree, and Conor's going to carry that. He may be, you can argue everyone deserves it, or you can argue he's the only one. Either way, I hope, Rashad, that he's making in the 40 to 50 million for this fight. Because if anyone's deserving of that absurd Canelo Floyd Manny money, good God, right?
Yeah, I think he definitely probably making that with everything combined, you know, with all the things that goes into it. But I'm not, I mean, 30, 40, that's a, you know what? I can't even speak on that because it's an understanding that I've never got to with the UFC. So, you know what? Maybe he is making that kind of money. Who knows?
It
man?
Is insane. I mean, you know, just
he brings so much value to the organization. It's hard to foresee them being in a great money position and not sharing the wealth with him.
I'm still not over the fact that I saw with my own eyes the $100 million check that Floyd Mayweather held up after the Pacquiao fight. And that was only his guarantee. It's like to make that for one night of work.
Gosh.
I mean, did you see the stats? You know how Mayweather was just named richest athlete of the decade by Forbes, and they had all the breakdowns. The breakdowns of the amount of money per punch landed over the last decade for Floyd, it was like, you know, he made more than my entire neighborhood makes for a year per punch.
Per punch, that's ridiculous.
It's just insane. But again, you can get yourself to that level of getting people to care about you. You know, you deserve it. And that's sort of part of this theme, Rashad, is that, like, what's really at stake here for Conor? You know, a loss would be disastrous, even though Cowboy Cerrone is in this fight. Like, he's in play to have a shot. A loss would be disastrous to the idea of which road do you take moving forward. Like I said off the start, are you celebrity name fighter moving forward? And we're going to see a cash out against Nate you know, fight people in that vein? Or are you going to the level of fighting Habib and maybe Kamaru Usman? A win or a loss in my eyes decides that. But honestly, Rashad, if you look at where Conor's true legacy is right now, he's the biggest draw and star in the sport's history, no doubt about it. But there's still a lot of hardcores who think what he's accomplished is a bit overrated. And to really be one of those upper room greatest of all times on the level of Anderson Silva, George St. Pierre, John Jones, etc., he's going to need a second chapter of his career, a legitimate second chapter. Think Randy Couture moving weight divisions and winning the title and starting a whole new branch. It's got to start Saturday night, and I think he's got to have it, Rashad.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think that, you know, he has had some amazing accomplishments in his career and what he's done thus far, but I think in order to really solidify in a hardcore mind as far as being that a guy who was not put in position to win and really fought his way to be in position to win, I think that, you know, the next half of his career can be about having these kind of fights where he's taken, you know, the next worthy challenger, and it's not always about just the big money fight. You know, I think that when it's all said and done, Conor may never have a legacy like a John Jones or one of these fighters who had to really fight their way to have their legacy. His legacy may just be what he's been able to accomplish as far as the growth that he's brought to the fighters, being able to bust open the bank as far as the UFC on a pay scale. You know, he's busted that open to the point where now it's easier for fighters to get paid $1 million paydays, you know? So I think that may be his legacy more than what he's actually been able to do inside the octagon. Not saying that what he's been able to do inside the octagon is trash, but I think what he stands for outside the octagon is going to be much more superior.
I just feel like if he never fights for and or wins a title again, or never puts together, you know, 2-3 quality wins in a row, you're going to have people that say, well, he was a star who got hot for a stretch, but he's certainly not an upper room all-timer. And that's interesting because I certainly believe he has that ability. But I wonder, we talked about this last week, I wonder what he would look like consistently at 170. I wouldn't have a good feeling on that. Do you think it's fair to call him one-dimensional? I've seen that debate come up a lot. Is Conor McGregor a one-dimensional fighter in your eyes?
Yes. Yes, and I say this. He's well-rounded. He's talented. He's a well-rounded fighter. He can do everything from, you know, A to Z in this fight sport. You know, he's a very knowledgeable, proficient fighter with that. But when it comes down to it, how his method of action, how he gets it done, it is usually one-dimensional. You know, you don't see him going for any kind of anything beyond, you know, you don't see him takedowns. You don't see anything on the cage. You don't see him really working the full aspect of what it is to do an MMA fight. So I would say in that aspect, he is one-dimensional. But that one dimension is a deep dimension. You know what I'm saying? He's very skilled at that dimension, you know?
This fight is at 170 pounds. And to believe why, and we've gone up and down the road on whether it's fair, it's certainly not fair in my eyes, because Dana's saying if Conor wins, he's probably next in line for Habib. So it's certainly not fair to anybody else in a number one contender situation who has to cut down to their actual division weight limit. And then these two are allowed to sort of just come into camp healthier. Now, it depends on what you believe, because Conor was asked by Ariel and basically said, you know, I'd fight him at any weight class. Donald doesn't look good at cutting down to 55. He's better at 170. I'd rather fight him there. I'll fight him with the flu. I'll fight him with anything. And you could sort of look at that and respond how you want, especially since Dana's gone on record a couple times saying Conor, you know, basically wanted it at 170. That's why we're here. They're both blown up lightweights. So do you see any difference in the way this fight will play out now at 170 compared to what it would have or could have been at 155?
I think so. And I say that because, you know, when you're walking around that way, you're carrying around a little bit more weight, you know, so the fight pace carries on a different kind of momentum, you know? So I think that may be, something that could affect the fight flow of the fight. Also power is another thing. You know, these guys who fight at 170 and are legit 170 pounders, These guys are weighing 190 on fight night. 190 on fight night. Conor McGregor was telling Ariel Helwani when he was sitting down, he's in his 60s right now. Now, that's before, you know, that means that he's probably going to step into the cage on fight night, maybe 65. You know what I'm saying? He's going to be underweight when he steps to the octagon. Cowboy is, he's fought himself to be a legitimate 170 pounder. He has to cut to make 170. He has to cut more to make 155, but 170 he still has to cut. So he's going to bounce back up to at least 185. Now, that weight disparity is not going to be so much if the fight stays in Conor McGregor's wheelhouse where he can stand up and strike. But if Cowboy starts leaning on him and make him start grappling, then you start to see the wear on that weight disparity. And that's what I think that you're going to be looking at this 170 weight class.
And, you know, Cowboy did a really interesting sit down with Brett Okamoto of ESPN that was just published that had some interesting quotes. And, you know, he would have been fine, he said, with it at either weight class. He didn't really care. One thing he said about Conor's cardio, now it's sort of like known or thought that Conor doesn't have great cardio. He gutted out UFC 202 in the rematch with Nate Diaz. There were moments he looked like he was going to be, you know, done for the count, and he rallied back. We've seen him battle with cardio at time. From Cowboy's perspective, and I want to see if you agree with this, he thinks Conor's cardio is fine. He just thinks he loads up 100% on every punch, and knowing, you know, as a fighter, how much that tires you out, that he can have big moments of stamina dumps. Do you ever see a future in which Conor almost adopts some Floyd-like ideas and says, okay, I'm not going in there for the KO, but especially if I want to compete at welterweight, I'll take a little bit off the fastball and I'll just be the quicker boxer who gets in and out. Is that something that could be there? Is that an end game? Is that a way to stay potentially longer and relevant than doing exactly what Cowboy said, which we've seen him do against many people, including Nate?
I disagree with his assessment. And I say that because of this, like, you know, the way you punch, you learn to have a gas tank for the way you punch. Like he's used to punching the way he's punching. He trains like that all the time, right? So he's going to be punching fast and hard. So he gets used to the conditioning of that. But I think his problem and the reason why he gets tired is not so much of the heavy shots. It's more or less the flow of the fight. Like he has a hard time going down and up, down and up. The down and up motion is what takes away Conor's gas to me, because when you're not used to going down and up and fighting a full spectrum UFC fight, then you get tired in aspects where you're not used to working. So I think that's the biggest problem with Conor, is the fact that he's not used to fighting a full flow fight with wrestling and takedown and getting back up and going up and down.
That's interesting. Have you had moments as well in big fights, Rashad, where it would look like you ran out of gas, you poured out the jug, but it just takes a minute or two to bring it back?
Yeah, I've had plenty of times like that where, you know, I just felt completely dead, but then you take a second and it does come back. But it does take a second, and sometimes during a second it can be a long second, it can be a minute and a half, it can be the rest of a round, but whatever the case may be, you do feel like that. But the thing is, when you get like that, you have to find positions where you're going to be safe. So sometimes when I felt like that, you would see me fight against the cage, you know, or you see me dancing around on the outside and make it look like I was showboating. I wasn't showboating, I was just resting. You know what I'm saying? Those are the things that you have to learn in order to be able to conserve your gas tank. And I'm sure Conor has his tools, but up and down for me with Conor is what zaps that energy for him.
All right, here's the key quote from the Cowboy interview with Brett Okamoto that I want to read and get your take on, because you can look at this from a few different ways. Obviously, you know, Rashad, whenever there's a fight, especially afterwards, I mean, people can think every fight was fixed, right? Like, there's not a scenario. When Conor knocked out Jose Aldo, Twitter was like, fixed fight, obviously. It's like, come on, people. And right now, you're certainly getting people that are going, well, obviously, Cowboy's going to take the money from UFC to shine up, you know, Conor and let him get knocked out. Look, it's not happening. But hear this out, okay? Brett asks, are you planning to take Conor McGregor down to the mat, obviously, and use his ground game and his wrestling game? Cowboy says, quote, you know, I probably should. But I don't think I will. I like to fight too. I like to get in there and throw down. Everyone says his stand-up is amazing, so why not go and test it? Everyone says you want to just stand there and get knocked out, but it's my decision. It's my stupidity. That's just a stupid game. That's just a stupid decision. But I know who I am. I look in the mirror. I know exactly who I am. So I get to make that decision that I want. Why wouldn't I want to stand with one of the best? Why not? Can I take a punch? That's the question I want to know. Can he take my effing kicks is also the question I want to know. End quote. Rashad, I ain't saying anything to the level of conspiracy or this is fixed, but there's almost a different kind of fixed. If you have a potential thing you can do that would be a strength for you and you don't do it, if Cowboy goes in there and does the tough guy thing, does the I want to face the best striker and beat him at his best, I want to entertain the fans, and he does that and gets knocked out. You okay with that?
No, I'm not okay with that. I'm not okay with what he said. I mean, listen. I'm sure he said what he said because it sounds like a great soundbite and everybody's like, yeah, Cowboy, stand there and bang with them. But here's the reality. The reality is this right here. It's a fight. And when you go into a fight, you go to employ all your skills, all your whole skill set. Cowboy is so proficient on the ground. Let me tell you, this guy, Cowboy, would train like 4 or 5 hours straight doing, like I would go and hang out at Jackson's and I'll go out somewhere and I'll come back and these guys are still rolling around from when they were rolling around when practice ended like 3 hours ago. They used to have these never ending practices where they would just do grappling all the time. So his grappling proficiency is ridiculous. And when I watch Cowboy fight now, I'm just like, he probably can extend his career another 3 to 5 years if he started just using his wrestling ability. And I think of Randy Couture, when Randy Couture went to heavyweight and he was like, yo, these guys are so big, I'm not going to stand and strike with them because I can get caught and get knocked out. I'm going to put him against a cage and I'm going to use my wrestling ability. And I think that's what Cowboy needs to do. He needs to understand that he's not that same Cowboy that he was when he's younger, and he can't take the shots that he used to. So with that, he has to change his game plan. He has to change his mode of attack, and he has to incorporate some of those things that he has built a whole career of perfecting, and that is the ground.
I hope he does, for the idea of it being the best possible matchup, both using their full strengths. I'm sure fans want him to bang. UFC, you could argue, wants them to go in there and bang. I mean, UFC would want Conor to win, I would think, but it's going to be interesting what Cowboy deplores. I think the most obvious and telling fact about this fight when I go to handicap it is this, Rashad, and it plays into what was just said there. If Conor's one-dimensional, as we say, his greatest skill plays so perfectly, in my eyes, into Cowboy's greatest weakness. Cowboy's a tough guy. But he can have a flashy chin. He can have a chin that if you get him perfectly, you can get him out of there. And he's also a really late starter historically. I remember interviews 5-6 years ago where he's like, you know, my coaches always say, man, I always have to take a certain amount of punishment early to wake up. And you know, the whole idea, which we say a lot ahead of Conor fights, if he gets to him early, he wins. If it goes extra rounds, we don't know what's going to happen. I think it's very much in play here. Not a one-punch knockout, but Conor's best chance of winning is also the biggest thing you fear about Cowboy.
Yeah. And also, and to add to that, I would also add in the left kick. Conor, he has an amazing teep kick, but I think the left body kick is going to be something that he has probably keyed in on, and he's going to be looking to exploit that on Cowboy, because Cowboy has a very hard time taking body shots, and the kick is something that, you know, breaks through whatever kind of guard that he may have up and get to that body. And, you know, every fighter who's fought Cowboy who was a southpaw, they went right in and they just went right after that left side. You know, you talk about, you know, Showtime Pettis, Masvidal, these guys, they go and they went hunting right for that left, that right side. So you can imagine that Conor McGregor is going to take a page out of his book and continuously hunt for that body right out the gate.
No doubt about that. I love about this fight because you could tell me if you could see the future, Rashad, that you tell me Cowboy gets blown away in 3 minutes, I'll believe it. Or you can tell me that it's a great war and Connor tires late, I'll believe it. I cannot lie. The interview with Connor only seems to awaken my belief that this will be what the fight kind of really is at its core, which is you don't want to say get well fight because Cowboy's nobody's bitch. And there really ain't no get well fights, certainly not the pay-per-view main event level in the UFC. But with all that said, when you go to handicap it, you know the potential of what Cowboy can do on the ground. You know what Connor wants to do. I still see a second round finish for Conor McGregor in what should be a high-paced, fun fight. I think they're both going to try to establish the kicking game to have success. But I think Conor's going to be like the old Conor, where when he lures you into those punching two-way exchanges, he's got the quicker, more accurate weapon in the end.
Yeah, he definitely has a heat seeker for that left hand. But, you know, all those points you bring about Conor, so extremely true. I just, when I look at this fight, you know, we have a tendency to only look at it from Conor's side because he's the big favorite in this fight and he's the guy making his comeback after being off for so long. But if we look at Cowboy and we look at what his mindset must be like, you have to realize that this is a guy who is like a rat backed into a corner, you know, meaning the fact that for him, this is it for him. And I don't want to make it seem like he's not going to have a career after this, but the truth of the matter is there is not going to be a bigger fight than this for him after this fight. You know what I'm saying? Like he's at that stage in his career where his best fights are probably in the past. He's probably not going to get another title shot. He's probably not going to work his way up to get another title shot. And I say that not to disrespect his hopes, but the reality of the situation is he has a list of competitors to get ahead of to get there. So you're looking at this being that shot, this being that title shot, this being that moment, the highest moment of his life. And I think that you look at somebody that career, like Cowboy, who's made a career of grinding and trying to be the guy who's in a position like this, and now he's finally here. Now he's finally in the biggest moment of his career against the biggest challenge of his life, and this for him is everything in his career. So I think he's going to go out there and fight like it. I think that we're going to see a different kind of Cowboy than we've seen in the past because this is his Super Bowl.
It's very fair. It's very fair. And if he comes out ready and willing to gut it out, like I said, off the start, the potential at the very least, if you pay your money for this pay-per-view, is you're going to see theater. And if it ends up going rounds, hey, this has some BMF potential from the idea of it's a real fight. It's two badasses, and it's a real-ass fight. Who wins this fight? Rashad Evans.
Man, oh man. You know, it's a tough one because there's so many different things going into it. But with Conor McGregor, it's really hard to go against Conor, and especially after hearing the interview that he gave with our Ariel. But I'm gonna be honest here, man. I'm a homer on this one. And as much as I love and I feel Conor in this fight, I'm going to go with the underdog in this one. I'm going to go with Donald Cerrone. I'm going to go with Donald Cerrone just because of everything that I was just saying. When you're a guy like Donald, then you don't, you know, opportunities like this are not coming. You pray for a situation like this. This is equal to, you know, the kids back in the day, you know, all right, I'm on my, Hail Mary pass to win the game. You know, this is that Hail Mary pass. And I think that he's not going to miss this opportunity to seize this moment.
How does he get there? How does he do this? Is it a consistent leg attack to slow him down and chop him down? I mean, obviously that's something Cowboy's always looking to do. Has Connor ever shown you that vulnerability in the past?
I don't think that he's going to have to do too much. I think the fact that he's going to still be there is going to be something that plays into the mind and into the outcome of the fight. I think the fact that he may be hard to get out of there, and you know, it goes back to, you know, what is the thinking in the McGregor camp? He's going to be out of there in 1-2 rounds. That goes back to what happened to him when he fought Diaz the first time. What happened? He underestimated that guy. And I know from experience, there's no more of a lonely place to be than being in an octagon with a fighter who is ready to kick your butt, and you didn't set up there and underestimated him, and now you're tired. That is a very lonely place to be, and that's where he was with Diaz. And the stage may be set again for that same exact situation to happen again, where he has a guy who's like, oh, okay, I'm an easy fight. We're going to see.
Wow, the loneliest place on earth, in the octagon when that gas tank is coming up on empty, no doubt about it. One thing I did want to close on regarding Conor that he talked to Ariel about is his interest in Floyd Mayweather again in one of those crossover boxing matches. And it's sort of connected to everything, given we've seen Dana and Floyd front row at the NBA game, handshake agreement. Dana says at the end of this year, he's ready to do business with Floyd again, ready to talk to Al Haymon. Conor said some interesting, weird things there. Okay, he said the fight with Floyd definitely going to happen again. He said, we're close to signing Manny Pacquiao. Ariel, and then there was like the sheepish little grin. And Ariel's like, wait, whoa, what does that mean? And Conor kind of half punted on it.
Yeah.
And Ariel's like, to fight him? And Conor's like, well, those discussions as well. I almost feel like, Rashad, Conor was talking out of school. Don't know this for a fact. When he says we're close to signing Manny Pacquiao, we all know Manny Pacquiao has one or two, it's not public, fights left on his PBC deal, and that there's suitors like DAZN that are ready to throw a lot of money to try to get a couple more fights out of him. Does we mean Zuffa Boxing and UFC Fight Pass? That was interesting, Rashad. I don't know. Take that for what it was. But I wanted to bring up the idea of that Floyd fight and say, is Conor more likely to box Floyd with a win against Cowboy Cerrone or a loss in 2020?
I would say he's more likely to box him with a win. I think with a loss. Well, here's the thing. I think it can go either way. And let me tell you why. Because if he loses, he hasn't lost in boxing. So it's not like the loss would transfer over. So a lot of people can be like, oh, yeah, well, he can do it in boxing because he's got his old boxing coach back and he looked good boxing against Cowboy. He just got caught with the submission or however he may lose that fight, right? So I think that may be something they can salvage even if he loses. And if he wins, it's a no-brainer. It's something that you have to set up. But more importantly, I wonder, you know, is Conor the guy they're lining up for Mayweather? Maybe could it be a Habib or something like that, providing he gets past Tony Ferguson, because now there's other big stars in the equation. You know what I'm saying? That can sell. I mean, I'm sure a lot of people would love to see Habib versus Mayweather. It won't be the same, but at the same time, you know, you have to understand that the stardom that Habib has grown so much as well, too. So now you're bringing in another guy who can bring in some numbers, too.
I do think if they did Floyd, Conor, too, in boxing, and everyone right away, and me, too, right away, we're like, oh, man, really, again? Yet the more you think about it, Rashad, if Conor would enter that on a winning streak in MMA, I know the sports aren't the same, but it's sort of the perception. Oh, he's a right. winner again.
He's back.
And then you go, wait, how old's Floyd again? Oh, he's turning 43 in February. Oh, when was the last time he was in a competitive? I'm sure the mainstream could talk themselves into, well, the first fight was exciting, and Conor's got to have a better chance given the age. Hey, they'll be printing money once again. They'll be printing the frickin' money, all right? And they'll be calling on Rashad to break the fight down. Believe that. All right, Rashad, to close here, let's get some thoughts on the fights that matter here below that. Not a deep card. Holly Holm back in the co-main event here, fresh off the head kick title loss to Amanda Nunes. Back in a rematch against Raquel Pennington. You may recall the fight before the Rousey fight when Holm started off her UFC career with two fights, one of those against Raquel Pennington. Very close fight. I believe it was a split decision. It was a very competitive fight in which Holm survived in advance and ultimately got that title shot. Holly Holm's 38. And Rashad, she's got such an interesting legacy. Like, to make that change from boxing to MMA and then dethrone Rousey the way she did, she's been cashing that meal ticket of the Rousey win forever. You could make a cynical case and be like, well, what's she done since then? She's 2-5. She's also been in 4 title fights against the best in the history of this game and has fought really well in most of them. So win or lose here, I think this could be the end, because what else are you fighting for? And if it was, I don't even know how you'd begin to define her legacy, because she's been such a huge star. She'll probably make the Hall of Fame in the end, yet she'll have one of those weird win-loss record breakdowns where you're like, well, was she actually a Hall of Famer? It's all kind of up in the air entering this fight. How competitive do you think this rematch will be?
I think it'll be really competitive. And for the most part, you know, Raquel Pennington, she seems to be focused. And that, to me, would mean that she's going to bring the fight more than she did the first time. And I believe that Holly is a competitor. You know, I've used to train with Holly, and you know, one thing that I know is that when you push her and when she's in a fight where she feels pushed, then she's going to respond in like nature. So I think that this fight has a chance to be a very exciting fight. And I like Holly coming into this position, because whenever she's had to answer that question after having, you know, some kind of setback when she was on the 3-fight losing streak, and then she came back and then she's kind of showed everyone that she still has it. I think, you know, she still has that in her, you know, and her legacy and what she has been to women's sports is amazing. You know, to go from boxing and then to, you know, have a great career in mixed martial arts and to compete the way that she has against the best in mixed martial arts, it shows, you know, that she's definitely somebody who's going to be in a Hall of Fame. But I think that she mounts another string of fights together, and I think we see another title fight from her before it's all said and done.
It's crazy, because I don't think she's past it. I mentioned, who knows if she'll fight again after a win or a loss, only because when you say the age and you say what else is there to fight for, against her obviously is the fact that the two divisions in which she competes in, Amanda Nunes is the queen of both, and she just lost in devastating fashion. So it's like, is that likely to produce a title shot? Probably not. But to be able to give all of those people very great fights.
Yeah.
She's still, you know, if you tell me she's the 4th best fighter, female fighter in the world, or 5th or 6th or whatever, like, she's still right there. But eventually, I feel like, what else do you have to fight for? Could this be the letdown fight? You know, remember Jermaine Durandamy fight? It was a fight she could have won, should have won. UFC wanted her to win. That was a kind of a gross, ugly fight. She left the back door open. I fear that can happen in this fight, and I just wonder, because she's so driven, what the drive is right now.
I think the drive for her, it has to be, you know, she's not married. You know, there's no family on the horizon. You know, you think with a woman that's 38 years old, she wants to, you know, kind of settle down a little bit and kind of enter the next phase of her life. But she's not there yet. You know, I think that she's reinventing herself in a lot of different ways, you know, and I think part of her reinventing herself in a lot of different ways is going out and competing and ending competing the way that she wants to end competing, you know, and I think that's what keeps her going. She wants to end her story the way that she wants to, and she hasn't had a chance to do that yet.
Be interesting to see. Always a huge fan, and the fans love Holly Holm. I mean, you go to like a public workout out of a fight, you never see more of a baby face pop, to steal from wrestling. I mean, people love some Holly Holm.
She gets some gifts. She does dances. I mean, she gets into it. She does.
She had that America's Sweetheart run. I mean, she says the right thing. She beheaded the queen, Ronda Rousey. It's a moment we will never forget. A couple other fights I do kind of care about. Women's strawweight division always delivers. I like this Claudia de Gadelha against Alexa Grasso fight. Claudia came back in that fight with Nina Marcos, in which she really wanted to reinvent herself at age 31. We didn't see the style of old. We saw more of a cerebral game in there. And Grasso's had some up and downs. Do you think Claudia still has a window to be a legitimate title contender? And will this fight get her there?
I think she has a great window, especially the fact that now she's working with Ricardo Almeida and Mark Henry. And I say these guys and this coaching staff, you know, I had a chance to work with them, and I only can describe him in one word, just genius. You know, with Mark Henry, the way he breaks down on a technical level what you need to do is unlike anybody I ever have. You know, for a fight, I had a complete playbook of calls that I had to do, and they were combinations. And he would, you know, he would drill me on these. You know, it was probably like 100 and something of these phrases that I had to remember. But when you remember the phrases, fighting and communication got that much easier, because he can say one phrase and he can relay a whole idea, a complete idea. And that, once you learn the system, you start to see athletes thrive on it. And a great example of that is Corey Anderson. Corey Anderson has been under the Mark Henry system and learned the Mark Henry system, and now he's to the point where he's perfected the Mark Henry system and he understands, you know, the ins and outs about it. So he's fighting at that level. I think Claudia Gadelha can get to that level, but it's going to take a couple camps. You know, it's going to take a couple camps of her getting it down. She doesn't live in New Jersey. She goes there for camp. So, you know, it all depends on how much she was able to grow in the time that she was there. But she's got a tough fight in Grasso. Her hands are nice. Grasso has some really nice hands. Really nice hands. Clean combinations. And I think that is that may pose some problems for Claudia.
She's a hungry fighter too, who's had some wins and losses, but has looked good a lot. This lightweight bout to open the card, always going to be fun when Anthony Pettis, the former champion, is involved. He's moving back down to 55. He's got Carlos Diego Ferreira ahead of him. But Rashad, the big story involving Showtime is that he's suing USADA. And did you hear this story ahead of the Diaz fight for Anthony Pettis? His urine sample was too diluted because he was too hydrated, so they retested him an hour before the fight. He cuts his hand on the glass of the pee cup. They tell him he can glue it shut or stitch it shut. He goes for the gluing option. He misses all his time to warm up. Duke Rufus' coach yelling at him to cancel the fight. With a glued hand shut, he goes into the fight and loses to Nate Diaz. And now he's suing that. This is a wild story. Can you make some sense of it? Have you ever heard of something like this?
It is a wild story. And, you know, it's something that is really too bad, to be honest, because here's my experience with USADA. You know, they've always, the people who come and test you, they're very, 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 they're not. They're nice people. You know what I'm saying? They're nice people, and they try to make sure that everything is easy as possible. But here is the problem. The problem does come in when you're not able to, you know, drop, and you're not able to, like, one time I had to sit in there for probably about, I don't know, like 2 hours after one of my fights, and it was after a fight I lost, and I was kind of beat up and kind of hurting, but they wanted me to drop. You know, they wanted me to use the bathroom, and I couldn't go. And I had to sit there and wait. So, it can be tough. And I'm sure that there's a lot more tough stories that go, you know, that's beyond wild, you know, what I experienced.
And you got the Jessica Penne story this week with USADA, which ended her career. I mean, it's tough. It's tough, Rashad.
It's tough because of the amount of times that you have to test. You know what I'm saying? Like, for instance, when I go and I have to do a fight, you test when you first get there. And once you first get there, you go and you check in with USADA first, and you go and you drop. And then after that, you have to test after the fight. Now, mind you, that's after you sweat it for 15 or 25 minutes. How much pee do you have after you sweat? You know what I'm saying? You don't have any.
But that's wild. The hour before the fight, they're hitting him up, and it all goes to a deeper debate we don't have time for. We all want a clean sport, but USADA's got some wild-ish going on lately. It's just, I don't know, Rashad. I don't know. I don't know how he's going to win that. I don't know how that lawsuit's going to play. I don't know the details. It's just wild. I care about this preliminary card main event, women's flyweight. This is Macy Barber's time to shine. She's looked great. 3 finishes in a row. But she's fighting a true veteran in Roxy Modafferi, one of the nicest people in the whole sport, who doesn't get finished easily and has many fights in her career. Rashad, if Macy Barber on ESPN and this type of showcase can have the type of win she's had before, I know she's only 22, but there ain't nobody in that division between her and Valentina Shevchenko. You may have to start that conversation if she blows her away.
you're going to have to, especially the way that Macy fights. Macy fights in a way that, you know, you don't typically see women fighters fight. Not saying that, you know, she brings an intensity like a dog in the fight that you don't need, you know, you don't typically see. The way she's always grunting every single punch that she throws, she's throwing with some serious intent. And I think that she goes out there with that intent, with that aggressiveness, she's going to finish Roxanne Modafferi, you know. And, you know, Roxanne's a great test for her because Roxanne is good on the ground, and she's, you know, she's cleaned up a lot of things in her game, working with Mike Pyle and those guys, and she's definitely cleaned up a lot of aspects of her game. But, you know, I think that this fight is a showcase for Macy to go out there and show that she is a number one contender.
Like I said, if she can stop her in spectacular fashion, Roxy just keeps coming, and she's big for the weight class. She's got a ground game. This would be an interesting task. Obviously, we want to see Andre Touchy Feely, who seems to be turning things around at featherweight. Good looking fight there against Sadiq Yusuf. Yusuf, is that correct?
Yusuf, yep.
That guy has looked good as well. This is sort of a circle it on the card. Could be a sneaky one, Rashad.
Absolutely, and Sadiq has some power, you know, and that's the thing about it. Like, I love the way Sadiq fight, man. He's such a he has such a great fluid fighting style, and he can crack too. You know, there's not a lot of guys at that size that have that kind of power, and it's so good to see Sadiq be able to drop that hand in there and get people out of there.
No doubt about it. Fired up for Saturday. I'll be on the grounds in Las Vegas. The State of Combat, as we mentioned, has you covered. Check out Friday's interview special from Media Day with everybody. We're going to get in that scrum with Connor and Cowboy. We're going to talk to as many people as we can on the card. Check out CBS Sports HQ the rest of this week. You'll be hearing from me on location. You'll be hearing from Rashad in the studio in Fort Lauderdale. Lots of great coverage coming your way. Rashad, I'm ready. I'm excited. The buzz is in the air. I can already feel it. I'm not even in the desert yet, and I can feel it. Fired up, man. Fired up. Let's do this.
See, I'm gonna need you to FaceTime me as much as you can, so I can feel the energy there. You know, I'm gonna be upset that I can't go. So, you know, help your boy out.
Yeah, you hold it down for us on the CBS Sports HQ, and believe it, for Rashad Evans, this is your boy BC. Get ready. Enjoy the fights this weekend. Instant analysis right afterwards. Don't forget about that. But for the rest of you, two words. That's it. We out.
CBS Wednesday.
We have so many cool, diverse people from different backgrounds, different beliefs, different upbringings, and it just keeps growing.
I feel it in my soul. I'm a citizen of the United States.
I'm a hustler.
I'm a big Taylor Swift fan.
I'm the queen of the tribe. I'm a
survivor. I am playing whatever role I gotta play.
I'm gonna play this game full speed.
I ain't going down like no punk.
A new Survivor, Wednesday on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.